When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? It's Off the Line Fantasy Football Podcast for another episode, episode 56. Welcome back. I know we were out the last week, but we're back. I know some of us, we won some fantasy championships. Some others, we fell short, but we'll get into that once we get into the show. My name is Eugene, and you can find me on Twitter at Fantasy Genes. That's G-E-N-E-S. You can also follow our official Twitter handle, Off the Line FF. And of course, of always, I got my other host with me, Ike. How are you feeling today, man?
Pretty good. Sad that the regular season is over. But hey, we got the postseason. We got a lot of interesting storylines. We got a lot of interesting teams that are set to take the field. So yeah, it's gonna be a fun postseason. It's gonna be a fun postseason. I'm looking forward to that.
You know, before we get into the show, we did have a national championship game that happened, Georgia versus TCU, and so it happened I was in California visiting my little brother, and you know, as I was like, you know, being in LA, I just saw a lot of purple out there, so I was like, all right, maybe. Maybe it's good vibes or whatnot. And then, then when I was leaving, it started raining. It had been clear because it was raining before I got there, clear when I got there. And then game time, it was just pouring. That's also exactly what happened to TCU. Also, they got poured on with the 65 points. Not sure if anybody expected somebody getting beat by 50 points, but I didn't think Georgia was going to leave any meat on the bone in terms of leaving the game close. So,
yeah. I mean, at some point, I just like when it was 38-7 at halftime, I was like, you know what? What are we doing? Like, what are we doing? Why are we watching this? Why am I watching this? I changed the channel. I started playing with my phone. I started doing something else because TCU did not belong on the field. They did not. It was a great story, right? It was a great story. You know, Hacksaw Max Duggan. You know, he was he was benched earlier in the season, or not benched, but he was a backup earlier in the season, and then took over for the starter. Had a great run, but truth of the matter is they spent all their energy against Michigan, and then they had nothing left for Georgia. I mean, you can tell the athletes on the field like were just overwhelming TCU.
Man.
Overwhelming TCU. They got one big play and it was a busted coverage. Wasn't anything TCU did, it was something Georgia didn't do. So outside of that, the game was not even remotely competitive, like at all.
No, I forgot about that busted cover. It could have been 65-0, honestly. Because
yeah,
outside of
should
that,
have been 65-0.
Like, they didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But you know, we wanted to touch on that college football game real quick. I know we're at the end of the season. We want to do a little recap, you know, of how we fared in our championship games. Because the last time we talked about it, we were going into our championship games. I know that week 17 was pretty crazy. Just seeing how that week ended with, you know, the sudden, you know, I don't even know what to describe it, just the craziness of, you know, seeing a player just, you know, falling, collapsing on the field and just dead for minutes on the field. And luckily they were able to save his life. And you don't want to take that for granted in terms of, you know, just seeing that in real time. So, you know, we thank God, we thank the people that were on site to, you know, save that person's life from tragedy in front of millions of people watching on TV and the people that are at the stadium, just, you know, just removing the fantasy perspective, but just real life is just, you know, crazy to see something like that, a game that we take for granted and not understanding what these players put on the line. And, you know, things like this do happen, you know, once in a blue moon, man.
Yeah. It's the crazy thing I've ever seen. You know, I was out, and you know, I was watching it on my phone because the TVs weren't on. And then I saw like a player that was, I saw a player down and I thought, oh man, another head injury or, you know, whatever the case is. And so, you know, I went down to like the clubhouse of where I was at, and then they were cutting to the studio, and I was like, wow, like they're still, the guy's still on the ground. And, but man, it's a crazy thing I've ever seen. And at the end of the day, like, we have to realize that these players they're human beings. Like, you know, they have lives, just like we do. We rely on them and root for them, every single Sunday, every single Monday, to play a game. But, you know, at the end of the day, like they have lives, they have loved ones. And, you know, that's the one thing that gets, you know, a lot of people lose sight of. And, you know, it's, you know, we're all thankful to see that, you know, Damar Hamlin is recovering, you know, pretty fast too. You know, he's tweeting away. He's, you know, showing love to everyone. And it's an awesome story. It's an awesome story to see. And it's just, you know, but again, man, it was a big, big scare for sure. Big scare.
Yeah. And then, you know, going on the fantasy side of this, that I know pretty much every league was affected by, you know, this game not being played. I know some of the leagues I was in, they just, you know, just scratched that game and whoever had the highest score won. I know one of my championship games, they were like, the person I was playing against had Chasen Allen. I had Diggs and he was down like 30 something points. And he was like, let's play week 18. I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's play it. Cause I had that. I mean, I was going for my three-peat. You know, I was kind of flexing a little bit because I could have just been like, nah, you lost. Let's give me, run me my money now. So I was like, no, let's go. Let's do it. Yeah. And I mean, I still won. I mean, those two players, I think they put up 50. I think Chase put up like 20. Diggs put up 24. So I still won. So, you know, I just wanted to flex that a little bit. But in terms of my championship games, that was the only one I won. I know. Another league, I went against Jay Rich. I had Diggs left, and I was down, I think, 50. And I was like, nah, this is not happening. So I had to concede that one. And then the other two, I was getting blown out again. And those ones, I didn't really have a chance. So went 1-for-3, 1 out of 4. So at least the one I won, I got the three-peat. So maybe I'll retire from that league since nobody can beat me.
No, you keep winning. You keep winning until somebody beat you. Keep winning until somebody beat you.
How'd you fare?
The previous week I had got knocked out in 4 out of 5 semifinals, which was unfortunate, but I ended up winning, only one championship this past week. And, you know, my opponent had Ja'Marr Chase. He was down about 30 points, 30 points. He might have made that up, but since the league decided to cancel the game, I had no players left. Ja'Marr Chase was left. Decided to, you know, to put the kibosh on it. So that was my third championship in the last 4 years in that league. So I'm kind of thinking about, reflecting on my dominance and
this guy.
We'll take some time this offseason to think about our future. It's been a long journey, long run of domination, but we'll see where things land in the offseason.
Yo, F you, F you. Big F you.
Yeah, but with that, my fantasy season didn't actually end there. I throughout the summer, Gene and I, we talked about a lot of these best ball teams that we joined, especially on Underdog. And the one contest that the couple of contests that stand out were, you know, obviously Best Ball Mania 3 and the Puppy, right? Those are the main contests that, you know, many in the fantasy industry play. They entered. They were very cheap to enter. You know, the Puppy was $5 and the Best Ball Mania was 25 per entry. So people just loaded up throughout the summer, various points. So long story short, I actually had a team make it all the way to the final in the Puppy, in the Puppy 3. And out of 223,000 people at the very beginning, I advanced all the way to the final of 293 people and I placed 7th.
Big bank.
Relax. I placed 7th. It was, you know, a pretty big hit, pretty big win. It's crazy to think about because, you know, I know a lot of people, they probably max out entries, 150 plus entries, but my total, I mean, I only entered the Puppy 3 19 times. I had 19 entries in that particular contest and one of them made it to the final. There was a couple of others that could have made it to like the semifinal, but I probably came up, you know, a couple points short. But this team had, you know, Jalen Hurts, had Kirk Cousins, and had Tom Brady at quarterback. Mm. And then my running backs were Ezekiel Elliott, Cam Akers, Damian Pierce. You know, he did a lot of work for me throughout the season, but he got hurt, I think in November and was placed on IR. And then I had Tyler Allgeier. He's been coming on over the last several weeks. I had J.D. McKissic. He was injured, I think, relatively early on. I don't think he played but like two or three games.
Yeah.
And then I had Jerick McKinnon. And Jerick McKinnon has not stopped scoring touchdowns since like the beginning of December. So, a combination of all those running backs were just killing it. And then my receivers, I had Justin Jefferson. We all know the wide receiver one overall this year. I had DK Metcalf. He didn't really fare well, in week 17. We'll more on him in a second. And then I had Devontae Smith for the Eagles, and he had a pretty strong finish to the season. Had multiple 100-yard games, just eating. And then I had Russell Gage, and I probably drafted him relatively high with all that preseason hype. Chris Godwin's uncertainty in training camp with his knee injury, and then Mike Evans was kind of in and out with a hamstring injury during training camp as well. And then I also had Mike Evans. So I had Mike Evans and Russell Gage. So, and obviously you guys know, Mike Evans and Tom Brady went absolutely apeshit in week 17. They were the wide receiver. He was the wide receiver one overall. Evans was. Brady was a QB one overall for that week. And they were both on my best ball squad. And that propelled me to the top seven spot. And then in tight end, I had Cole Kmet and Mike Gesicki. They both scored touchdowns that week as well. It was a crazy, crazy finish to the season. I know in that particular draft, I remember because that was one of the very few drafts I was able to stack like multiple pass catchers and multiple quarterbacks, because a general strategy in best ball is stacking, stacking good quarterbacks with good receivers. And I was able to get, Jefferson and Cousins, Brady and Evans, Hurts and Devontae Smith all together on one team. So that was, I'm not saying I would have won, but I mean, that was a general strategy that I deployed throughout, across a lot of the teams that I drafted. This team just happened to pop at the right time. Like all different players, Cam Akers in the semifinal had like 40 points. These players just they showed up at the right time, and that was a pretty cool ending to my fantasy football season.
You know what was crazy about your running backs and wide receivers? You had between weeks 15 to 17, you had the RB3, the RB4, the RB7 during those 3 weeks in the playoffs. And then your wide receivers, you had the wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4. Wide receiver 19.
Yeah, it's crazy. Insane. Man.
It popped at the right time,
at the right time, man. That's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, I'll definitely be entering a lot more of these, next year. It's definitely something to build on, and I'm just thankful. I even got that far.
Shoot, we might need to team up and just go with a portfolio approach so we can get closer to that one that
2 million out. Yeah, 2 million. Or we do it like a FFPC best ball team drafted together or something.
Yeah, yeah. We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out. That's another conversation for another day.
Yeah, it is.
All right. But just moving along, Gene and I, we had some, bold predictions at the very beginning of the season. And we want to see how well we did. I'll go ahead and get it kicked off. The first bowl prediction, one of my proudest ones and one of my biggest hits, was Justin Fields, top 8 quarterback. Definitely a smash. He finished as the overall QB6, and he missed a couple of games here the last couple of weeks. He came up maybe 60 plus yards or something short of Lamar Jackson's single season rushing yards record. He was a stud. He was a stud. I think between like week, I think it started like week six, week seven. I think no, it was a Monday night game against the Patriots. It's kind of when things started to kind of turn around for Justin Fields, and he just went on that tear for like 3 or 4 weeks. That really, really buoyed him up there to, as you know, I think he was like the QB two or three at one point. But he settled at the QB six. So that was definitely one of my biggest hits. Another hit that I had was Ramondre Stevenson being a top 15 running back. He finished as the RB 7 overall and the RB 11 in points per game. He kind of took over that backfield after Damian Harris got injured, but he never gave that job back. He looked like the more explosive back. He was much better in the passing game, and he got a lot of check downs, a lot of targets out of the backfield. And so, he was just consistently the better player. He was consistently the better player. So he benefited a lot from passing game usage. But he was, also the goal line back and got a lot of the rush here as well. I also had Dak Prescott as a top three quarterback. That was a clear miss. He missed 5 games, and then even when he got back, he was only the QB 15 in points per game. So. A lot of those interceptions have something to do with it, and he doesn't necessarily have that good of a ceiling as a fantasy quarterback as he once did. Lack of weapons and his mobility has kind of waned over the last couple of years. He's not running nearly as much as he used to, but he's still a pretty decent fantasy quarterback. It's just if you give him another weapon outside of CeeDee Lamb, he's not having to force the ball to Noah Brown or whoever and. And then the corpse of Michael Gallup, we haven't seen him be good in quite some time. So, to round it off, I had Miles Sanders scoring double digit touchdowns this year, and we talked about that ad nauseum. He was due for some positive touchdown regression. No touchdowns last year. Had a lot of opportunities inside the 10, just wasn't able to cash in. But he scored 11 touchdowns this year, and he was. The Eagles offense was humming. They were a top offense in the league. And if you're in a good offense, you're going to have a lot of scoring opportunities. And Miles Sanders had a lot of those. And he was able to cash in. So Those round out my main bold predictions for the 2022 season.
My bold predictions, they were kind of a little more on the miss side. I had 7 of them. My first one was Gerald Everett would finish as a top 12 tight end. And he actually finished 13. So I was almost there. He was just
call that. I think you can call that a hit because it was right. It was right there. Depending on what kind of league you're in and points or whatever, it's give or take. You might call that a hit, or you can say that push.
I'll say a push because he was literally 0.9 points behind Dallas Goedert to be inside the 12. But it's close. We'll call that a push. And then my second one, Kadarius Toney would lead the Giants in receiving with over 1,100 yards. That was a super miss because this guy, Dable and him just didn't get along at all, and he just had this hamstring injury after barely playing any snaps because of the hamstring injury. Then he gets traded to the Chiefs, and he does pretty much nothing on top of him missing some games because of the hamstring injury. So that was a big fail on that part, just being hyped up about the one game that he played against the Cowboys and, just the mystique of what he could do was just misled me and a bunch of other people that are probably listening right now. So my bad for that one.
And the guy that's on the other side of this microphone too.
Yeah.
led us astray. But you know what? He's, for how he's being used for the Chiefs right now. If you get him a full season, we know Juju's on a 1-year deal. I think McCall Hardman's a free agent.
Yep.
I don't know what to make of the rest of their receiving core, but he could have a role next year in Kansas City. We'll see.
Yep. Next one, T. Higgins would lead the Bengals in receiving, and that hit. He actually led them with 1,022 yards, and I think Chase was behind him by like 60 or 70 yards. Chase missed 4 games because of injury and still was just barely behind him. So luckily that one hit for me. But I know we've been a lot of people in the space have just been arguing about who's the number one. This keeps I mean, we don't have to say any. As long as you watch, you know that these guys are both number one. So, you know, it's just exciting to see what the Bengals will do with him next season. You know, this would be the last year's deal before they have to figure out who or how they're going to pay. But I can't imagine Higgins, if he's not moving this offseason, then I don't think he's going to be there after next year for sure, because of, you know, the amount of money that's going to have to be shelled out for Chase and Burrow coming soon.
They got some decisions to make.
Yep. Yeah, pretty soon. Next one, this one was also a hit. We got Jalen Hurts will finish as a top three quarterback, and he finished three. This guy, I mean, again, you heard Ike's underdog team, how he smashed with the Eagles stack. The Eagles offense was just on a tear this year, man. There was just a well-oiled machine, and he was actually QB1 before he missed week 16 and 17 because of injury. So I definitely think he would have been the QB1 if he didn't get hurt, if he didn't hurt that shoulder for sure. So
now do we think that's really a bold prediction? Like,
I mean, people were still being questionable, even though they had just picked up AJ Brown. People still weren't believing in Sanders because of the previous season. And I know I was one of those people where I didn't believe that he would be able to support two top 24 wide receivers, because they hadn't had any top 24 wide receiver finish since Alshon Jeffrey in 2017. So I didn't think, let alone one, but two of them would finish that high. So,
but it's about Hurts, and Hurts was like the number one QB in 2021.
Before he got hurt,
and yeah, that was without a proven weapon in AJ Brown. So I don't know. I don't think it's bold. I mean, we'll agree.
It's a prediction. Maybe you just take out bold and just say a prediction.
A prediction. You can say a prediction. Yeah. Oh, I think Jalen Hurts finishes top three. Okay. Don't make it bold. Like, I don't think it's
bold. All right. The next one was Adam Thielen finishes with 10 plus touchdowns for the third straight season. That was a miss. He wasn't even close. This dude looked washed. In Jets, as you saw this season, he was the guy and no one else until TJ Hockenson came from trade from the Lions, and then you saw he was the number two. It's just Adam Thielen was just an afterthought. Even at the end of the season, KJ Osborne was even cooking, and Thielen was still just pretty much watching on the field. So sad sight to see there. Yeah. All right. The next one, this one was definitely a surprise miss, was Metcalf and Lockett would finish outside the top 24 wide receivers, and these guys actually finished inside the top 15, both of them. It was crazy to see that Lockett finished actually number 12, wide receiver 12, and then DK finished 15. So this was definitely one of the biggest surprises. I know before the season started, the Seattle Seahawks offensive line was graded the worst by PFF before the season started. None of us thought that Geno Smith would, you know, be a viable starter, let alone be QB6 for the season. So just old man Pete Carroll figured out a way, and just he has another life, and you know, you see them there in the playoffs. So just amazing what they did there, honestly.
And Russell Wilson and them are not in the playoffs. Like, it's
bro, I mean, and gave them a top what, 5-6 pick on top of that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's one of the more puzzling, like, the Seattle's outlook in the off season was so bleak.
Dude,
it was so bleak,
and now they're like one of the premier like teams because of like the draft capital that they have, the young players on their offensive line. Like, their secondary was two rookies that fucking shut down like half the year they were shut down. So yeah,
we weren't even sure if the Seahawks could get first downs,
bro. Bro, and that offense was out there humming at, I mean,
Geno Smith majority threw 30 touchdowns. What? Like,
it's crazy, man. Crazy. But yes, that was a miss also. And then my last prediction was Aaron Jones would lead the Packers in receptions, and he actually tied for the lead in receptions. I didn't think before the season, I thought this was set up for him to do major damage because of, you know, the lack of weapons or the lack of trusted weapons. But he did his thing relatively how much that offense actually struggled. I know Aaron Rodgers was not really good this year in terms of fantasy numbers. So
it feels like Aaron Jones should have had a lot more.
Yes. A lot more. And then for whatever reason, just didn't happen.
I think 56 is just
it was a low number for him. I thought he was gonna have 70 plus easy.
At least 70.
It's low. You got to think about some of these games where like he got out targeted by AJ Dillon for whatever reason. Remember that little span where he just wasn't getting touches?
Don't remind me, please.
and then him dealing with injury late in the season, like it was a weird showing looking at the Packers and just how he was used overall.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. I feel like I don't want anything to do with them anymore, with that offense anymore, because of just how, I don't know, just how egregious they use Aaron Jones. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No,
like he should not be off the field that much. He just shouldn't be.
Yeah,
he just shouldn't be. But hey, well, that's someone else's problem to deal with. I love Aaron Jones. Love him as a player. I'm one of the original Aaron Jones truthers. But man, I just, that usage is just too frustrating.
Yeah, it was egregious. But let's go on and talk about some of the players that we targeted before during the preseason before the season started. I'll go real quick with the five that I had. Funny that we just talked about this guy, Aaron Jones. I had him as one of the players to target. I know preseason ADP, he was RB10, and he actually finished RB8. And like we just said, we thought he would finish higher just because of the potential usage in the passing game that just didn't happen at the rate that we thought it would, but it was still good enough for him to finish RB8. The second one for me was Trey Lance. He was at ADP QB 13. He was going pretty high, and you know, he played one game in the torrential rain, looked like ass. Then he played in about a quarter of the next game, wasn't really, I mean, I think they did a couple scheduled runs in the second scheduled run. He got rolled over and his ankle was pointing a different direction and his season was over. So that just didn't work out. Brandon Cooks, my third target, he was preseason wide receiver 20. This guy finished wide receiver 51. As you saw, the Texans just didn't know what the fuck they were doing on offense, weren't really using them, rotated like eight different quarterbacks. Just didn't work. And on top of that, he didn't play a couple games because he thought he was going to get traded, and didn't happen because of the extension he signed before the season started. So nobody wanted to touch that. So failed season. Next player was Michael Pittman. He was our wide receiver 13 ADP before the season started. He finished wide receiver 20. The way they used him was really weird. He, instead of him going down the field, they just used him with digs and slants. Just Matt Ryan's arm just looked dead. Just the offense was just dead by the end of the season. Just didn't happen for him. I know we were really high on him this year. Just didn't happen, man. I don't know why. And then the last player that I targeted was, you know, my guy Gerald Everett. I was pushing him heavy before the season. He was tight end 21. I thought this was an easy smash. Finished tight end 13 for the season. So I think overall I had the right process of just, you know, a couple of players that just didn't work out to the extent I thought it would. So
yeah. So going to my players to target, my first and probably like my biggest targeted hit was Saquon Barkley. I think he was the guy that I had set out to almost draft him in almost every single draft. The logic was pretty simple. Year two post ACL tear, has RB1 overall upside. He was ramping up in 2021 prior to, you know, him, you know, rolling his ankle on an errant Daniel Jones pass. But he finished this year as the RB5 overall and in points per game. So pretty much, you know, kind of in line with what we expected, what most of us expected out of him this year. So it was a bounce back year. And there was actually some games where, you know, he didn't necessarily have the best, you know, efficiency. There was times where he looked like he was kind of, you know, being, you know, worn down and being just slammed into the back of the line. That Giants offensive line didn't play as well as they should have, at least down the stretch. But there was a couple of big runs that he had, you know, towards the end of the season. So, Saquon Barkley, clearly like my top hit this year. Next, I had Lamar Jackson. He was my QB2 going into the season. I just, you know, again, you know, he had Rashad Bateman, you know, coming back, you know, from injury, and he showed a rapport with him earlier in the season, until he got hurt. Lamar Jackson flashed, you know, that 50-point upside against the Dolphins in that week two shootout. But, you know, from a points per game perspective, I know Lamar Jackson has been hurt over the last month, but from a points per game perspective, he was still the QB6 in points per game. So, you know, it wasn't like Lamar Jackson was out there and not performing, but, you know, he just, you know, bad injury luck. So Lamar Jackson. But I think my biggest miss this year was Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore was my biggest miss by far. He was an auto pick for me almost every single sixth round I had in drafts. He was an auto pick, and those teams that had Elijah Moore were destined to not go anywhere. And he, you know, started the preseason. I think he was the wide receiver 38, going basically 84th overall. Do you want to know where he finished?
Yeah, where did he finish?
You're going to have to go all the way down. From a points per game perspective, he finished as the wide receiver 100.
Jeez.
From a points per game perspective. But from a total points perspective, he was the wide receiver 81. So that's like a wide receiver, I don't know. You lose count at that point, right?
he's a guy on your waiver wire.
He's a waiver wire. I mean, some guys that finished ahead of him: Devontae Parker, Romeo Dubs, Darnell Mooney, and he got hurt. You know,
yeah. And he scored one touchdown.
Rashid Shaheed, Isaiah Hodgins, DJ Chark, Corey Davis, Nico Collins, Marquise Goodwin, Mecole Hardman.
Jeez.
So that's that kind of paints a picture of how rough it was for Elijah Moore. I'm still in Elijah Moore. He's going to be going in at a discount. I think hopefully once they get better quarterback play, I think his talents will be utilized, because, you know, there's no reason why he shouldn't be targeted a lot in that offense. I know Garrett Wilson came in and started shaking shit up and showed that he's a stud.
Yeah.
But Elijah Moore on the other side, just as comparable. So biggest miss was Elijah Moore. Next, I have Darnell Mooney. That was another miss of mine. He was the wide receiver 29 going into the season. He just came off of a second year breakout. And, you know, much like Elijah Moore, you know, Darnell Mooney was almost an auto pick in like the sixth, seventh turn. But, you know, Darnell Mooney finished as the wide receiver 72. And he got hurt. So it was just a bad showing for those two guys that I had, you know, invested a lot in, I would say, in many drafts. And then I had Ramondre Stevenson, and we talked about him earlier. That was a big hit for me. I wasn't able to draft too much of him, but the places that I drafted him in, I had some pretty decent success for the most part. And then just rounding it out, I had Kadarius Toney. He was the wide receiver 51. His ADP was up and down during the summer. Got pretty high, but I was able to like not really draft too much of him. He was a target of mine, but I wasn't able to draft too much of him because people were beating me to the punch. So thankfully, I avoided the landmine there. And then and then I had a bonus pick of Miles Sanders, and this was another guy I wasn't able to really draft too much of, but this is a guy that I really wanted in a lot of my teams. And, you know, it was just for the reasons that I outlined. Positive touchdown regression was coming. You know, run heavy offense, really good offense, and would definitely open up running lanes. I think Miles Sanders had, you know, just shy of 1,300 yards rushing and 11 touchdowns. So he was a target of mine, but unfortunately I wasn't able to get too much of him.
Yeah, there was some pretty good names, good targets that you hit on for sure.
Yeah, but, you know, just the Elijah Moore and Darnell Mooney, those are two guys that, oh man, they screwed me big time. They screwed me big time this year. Doesn't mean I'm completely out on them next year or next season. It's just got to be more cautious. We watch the film, we get better, and we try to do our thing.
Yes, we do. All right, real quick, let's hit on these players that we coined to avoid. My first one was Damian Harris. He was RB29 before the season started. He finished RB51. And the main thing was that because of last year, he was so efficient in the red zone. I think he had 13 touchdowns on 44 red zone carries. That's like 30%. So I was like, there's no way he's going to repeat that with him not catching any passes. And sure enough, he was hurt, lost his spot, hurt, and finishes RB51. So that was a good avoid there. I avoided Patrick Mahomes. I didn't think he was going to repeat at QB1, and he fucking repeated at QB1. So my main reason is that because
it wasn't Josh Allen. I thought it was Josh Allen.
Oh, sorry. He was QB2. Sorry. And I thought in his ADP was QB2. I didn't think he was going to finish probably top five, but I didn't think he was going to finish above QB2 because of no Tyreek Hill and a bunch of new weapons that I didn't think that were good. And he finishes not only a higher yards per reception than last year, but he finishes at QB1. So that was a miss. DK Metcalf, I thought he was a void, and his ADP was wide receiver 19. He finishes at wide receiver 15. As we talked about, his online was graded as the worst before the season started, and we thought Geno was fucking dust, and he wasn't, and their O-line was pretty good. So that was a miss. AJ Brown, I thought because of the new system and the offense hadn't supported a top 24 wide receiver, I thought he was not going to be better than the ADP at wide receiver 11 preseason, and he finished as wide receiver 5, as we saw that he just smashed everything in front of him. And then Mark Andrews, this was somebody I thought was – he was – before the season started, his ADP was tight end 2. I figured he'd finish top 5, but I didn't think he was going to be top 2 or 1 just because Baltimore had their top 3 running backs injured before the season started. So they threw the ball. I think they ran the most plays per game last year. I think they ran the ball like bottom 8. So I just thought because of, you know, people coming back from injury, I just thought they would get back to the running game. And he ended up finishing tight end 3, even though like half the season it was pretty bad because of Tyler Huntley playing and, you know, just how weird their offense was this season. So, you know, it's kind of hit or miss with their voice, but, you know, again, we go back, we watch the tape and try to get better for next year for everybody listening.
Yep. So my avoids, first starting off, I think this is probably my biggest avoid was Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And for a while, you know, he was, I think he got up to like the RB4 or at the early part of the season, just ran hot on touchdowns. But as we talked about on the show, as many of the fantasy industry alluded to, his usage was just not sustainable enough for, you know, you weren't able to sustain all that production with, you know, basically RB3 usage. And that's kind of where he finished on a points per game basis, an RB4. He finished at the RB39 on a points per game basis. And so he was a landmine that I avoided, and, you know, a player that we told you that it's not going to last. You need to trade him. You definitely need to trade him. You definitely need to sell high. But people were just kind of trotting him out there and costing themselves wins because they thinking, oh, he's just going to fall in the end zone again. But, you know, we knew that it wasn't sustainable, and this was a guy that, you know, he lost his job to Jerick McKinnon and Isaiah Pacheco. And then he got hurt. Unfortunately, he got hurt. But, you know, again, like, this was a guy that we did not want any parts of this season. And, you know, in the end, it came out that he was a guy that you needed to avoid. The next guy that I wanted to avoid was Alan Lazard. He was getting a lot of hype in the offseason as, you know, Green Bay's number one receiver. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers had total faith and trust in him and this, that, and the other, this, that, and the third. I mean, he finished as the wide receiver 35. Kind of in line with where he was going. Although I did see some, you know, drafts where he was creeping in the 20s from a wide receiver range, you know, creeping into the top 24. That was absurd. That was ridiculous. I didn't think that was, you know, very smart for people to do. You just never really saw the a good ceiling from him. He had a couple of 100-yard games and had some touchdowns, but I mean, if you just look at his numbers, I mean, he's basically right on line with what he was last year.
Yeah.
So you know, really not blown away from, you know, from Alan Lazard, especially when, you know, Christian Watson, who basically was an invisible for like the first half of the year, almost finished with the same amount of points as him this year. So 34, you know, wide receiver 34 and wide receiver 35 respectively, in a points per game perspective. And the paths they took to get there were completely different.
Yeah, it was.
So Alan Lazard was a guy that I avoided. And then another guy I avoided, another wide receiver who got a lot of hype in the offseason that I wasn't really too keen on, was Juju Smith-Schuster. You know, he finished as the overall wide receiver 27, you know, a wide receiver 3, you know, pretty decent. You know, I had him, you know, ranked relative, like much lower than that before the season started. I think I had him in like the 40s.
Probably.
Yeah, I think I have him in the 40s. Him and Lazard were probably in the same range for me. I just didn't buy it, but he had some good games for the Chiefs. But he was only, you know, from a points per game perspective, the wide receiver 37. So it wasn't a guy that you were building your team around. It wasn't a guy that you were, you know, chomping at the bit to acquire. And so, but these two guys, I still feel pretty good about, you know, how their seasons ended up playing out based on, you know, what I felt about them before the season. And then I had Jerry Jeudy as an avoid, thinking that, you know, Cortland Sutton was going to be the number one there. Boy, was that one wrong. And we got that entire Denver Broncos offense in general. We got that wrong.
Wrong. Big time.
Jerry Jeudy finishes the wide receiver 21 from a points per game perspective. So he turned out to be the much better receiver than Cortland Sutton. I don't know if Cortland Sutton had, I think he scored his first touchdown last week in, you know, basically in a week that didn't matter for the first time in like eight or nine weeks. But Jerry Jeudy finished as the wide receiver 22. So he was a much better receiver this year than Cortland Sutton. So that was definitely a miss for me. Even though Jerry Jeudy got a lot of his production towards the end of the season, when either, you know, you were probably out of the playoffs anyway. But, you know, there may have been some playoff teams that benefited from some of these good Jerry Jeudy games. But yeah, and then to kind of round things off, I had J.K. Dobbins as another avoid. He was just going way too high in drafts. His knee injury was something that was not just your typical ACL tear. It was an ACL, I think LCL and PCL or something like that.
And a torn hamstring.
And a torn hamstring. Like his leg, his knee basically exploded. And, you know, he came back too early and had to get shut down for 4 weeks. And then he came back and he had 200-yard games in a row. So at least towards the end of the season, he started looking like the J.K. Dobbins that a lot of people thought they would get early in the season. So with a full offseason of, you know, just kind of continuing to rehab that knee, I think in 2023, he'll be right where he needs to be, like in the RB20 range going in drafts. And so yeah, those were my avoids. To round out the show, we know a lot of you are looking for what's next. You know, fantasy football is over. You know, you're trying to find something to get into. The one thing that we, you know, Gene and I, we're going to be taking part in, we're going to be doing a lot of these best ball playoff contests on Underdog. Underdog Fantasy, they have a bunch of these contests that are running every day, every single week. You know, and they're half PPR, not full PPR. So just keep that in mind. But the main contest that they have going on, they have the Gauntlet for $25. Max 150 lineups. They have the Big Mitten for $250, and that's a maximum of 27 lineups. And they have the Mitten for $5, and that's a maximum of 150 as well. So this is just basically a best ball playoff contest. And the rules, it's a 6-person draft. You get to draft 10 players. Your starting lineup is one quarterback, one running back, two wide receiver tight ends, one flex, and 5 bench spots. And it's basically, you know, four weeks of competition, you know, obviously wild card, divisional, conference championships, and then Super Bowl. Top scoring team from each group. They move on to the next round. So round one and two, you play versus five other teams. Round three, you play versus seven other teams. And round four, which is the Super Bowl, that's, you know, versus 157 other teams. And that's basically all the teams that won from their respective groups to move on to the next week. Basic strategy, just real simple. Win every single week. You need to win each week. unfortunately, these points don't carry over from previous rounds. I know that would be like the initial thought or your initial inclination is that all these points carry over. If they don't carry over, it's every single week. Do you win that week or not? And so you kind of have to draft your teams on how you think the playoffs will go. So if you think, let's say, if you think the Bengals are going to go back to Super Bowl, you know, you obviously want to draft Joe Burrow as your quarterback and then draft one of Chase or Higgins. If you're able to get both, that's great. But but chances are you probably won't. So maybe you can pivot to, you know, Higgins and Boyd or something like that. So if you think, you know, a player like the, you know, if you think they're going to play the Eagles in the Super Bowl, make sure you draft some Eagles players. Make sure you draft, you know, AJ Brown or Miles Sanders or Dallas Goedert or whoever. So, you know, just kind of have that in mind. Don't draft too many players though that have a bye, because you don't get points for that week. So you want to make sure you draft the guy that's going to get points for you in that given week, or has the potential to have a spike week, so to speak. Like, for instance, like the Chargers, like Austin Eckler, he's finished as a fantasy RB1 overall. He's playing against Jacksonville this week. They're not the best against the run or against running backs. I think he may have a really, really good game, and he's going to advance. So he's going to guarantee at least two games, right? So you'll get two games of Austin Eckler and his 35-point upside. So that's a good guy to kind of have in your lineup for at least 2 weeks, obviously for the first round and then the second round. So you do definitely need to draft two quarterbacks since one has to start each week. But if you're confident in one particular team making it all the way to the big dance, this is where your strategy can differ. So if you think Josh Allen is going to, or the Bills are going to make it all the way to the Super Bowl and win it, draft Josh Allen. Don't draft any of the quarterbacks. And then you can fill in the rest of your team with, you know, other running backs or other wide receiver flexes or things of that nature. Anything else I'm leaving out? I mean, I know you typically want to play like at least 5 to 7 entries so you can hope for that. You know, that ticket to kind of fall in your lap to get to the big dance. But is there anything else that I'm potentially missing here?
I would say, like, if you're drafting, because a lot of people might want to stack up on like the Eagles or Chiefs because they have the bye, and with the, you know, with the wrinkle of like the points not carrying over, you could even be a little more contrarian and go like with some of these teams that they're probably going to be one and done, like, you know, Travis Etienne going against the Chargers, who have one of the worst run defenses. You could even go that way, knowing that you got at least two other running backs on your team that might play like two or more games. So you could go that way to get that, you know, get that push that first week, because you're going to need it if you're drafting like three players that have buys. Like, you need points. So it's tricky. It gets a little spicy when you start, you know, dabbling with like quarterbacks and some, I don't know, you might be even in a draft where somehow you end up with Hurts and Mahomes. I mean, that'd be bad. I think that'd be bad process, because now you have to spend another pick on a quarterback again. When I think you should be only drafting two quarterbacks so you can load up on your wide receiver / tight end position, since that position could be, you can start at least three of those type of players. So I would definitely lean on at least trying to get one or two players that you think are going to be one and done in case that spike week happens. And also, in terms of your player pool, you shouldn't X out anybody, certain players. Like, let's say, for instance, like Quez Watkins, he shouldn't be, like, every player should be in your pool to be drafted, because he might have that spike week that you need to, you know, prepare you into another round. So you shouldn't leave any player out in terms of potential drafting them.
Yeah, he can definitely be players like him, to Kadarius Toney, Mecole Hardman, like those guys can make a difference for you down the stretch, because those guys are for all intents and purposes, guaranteed two playoff games, right? I mean, yeah. I think the Chiefs for sure. I mean, they'll play the bracket. They'll play the side of the bracket that does not have the Bills and the Bengals. So you'll at least have you'll at least have two Chiefs games. And on the Eagles side, if the Cowboys somehow lose to the Buccaneers, which is very likely, you'll see the Buccaneers go to Philly and lose. And then you'll have at least two games of the Eagles, and so because they'll play at home and they'll play the NFC Championship game, and so those are things that you kind of have to keep in the back of your mind. But it's as far as like some team builds, the most common team build that I've seen and that I've actually done is two quarterbacks, three running backs, and five wide receivers / tight ends. I mean that's usually the optimal one for me. I've seen a couple of others that have one quarterback and then three running backs and then six wide receiver tight ends, and then I saw somebody take it a step further: one quarterback, two running backs, and then seven wide receiver tight ends, which is pretty interesting. I mean, there's all kinds of strategies that you can deploy, but for the most part, the most common one that I've done and that I've seen is 2-3-5. So that's kind of the one that I'm sticking with the most. And I can just kind of walk through a couple of my teams that I have right now. Like for instance, I have Joe Burrow as one of my quarterbacks, and then Kirk Cousins as the other. So in this particular build, you have in mind that the Bengals may go to the Super Bowl again, right? So
yep.
I got Joe Burrow, and then I got T. Higgins as wide receiver, and then running backs, I have Miles Sanders. He has a bye, so you won't get points this week. You'll get points next week, and I think that they may play two games. And then I got Saquon Barkley, so he may get a lot of points against the Vikings this week. And then I have J.K. Dobbins, so you never know what's going to happen with J.K. Dobbins. He could have a pretty good game as well against the Bengals. And then on the And then my other receivers, I got Stephon Diggs. So he's guaranteed at least a couple of playoff games, assuming things play out the way they should. And then I have Dallas Goedert. So he has a bye. I have Mike Evans. And so and this kind of assumes that maybe they have a really, really good week against the Cowboys. And whatever happens, happens. If they advance, cool. If they don't, cool. Mike Evans did his job, right? And I have other guys that I can rely on. And then rounding out, I have Adam Thielen. So that Thielen Cousins stack could come into handy this week. He could turn back the clock and have a couple of touchdown receptions against the Giants or something like that. So that's kind of the logic there with this team. So have you drafted any teams yet, or are you still playing?
I have not, but I probably will be starting tomorrow because I know those leagues are starting to fill up or whatnot. So I do want to also say, like, some of these, playing these type of tournaments, I know a lot of people like taking the portfolio approach. So, I mean, those are people that are probably, playing like 50 to 100 or 150 lineups. When you're playing like 5 to 7, you don't have that luxury to take a portfolio approach. You need the players that you really, or teams that you're really eyeing, you got to really hone in and hope those picks hit, because you don't have the luxury that you have where a portfolio approach, if you got like a hundred lineups, you can take some of these team builds, like with the one quarterback, three running backs, six wide receiver tight ends. You have the luxury of doing that because you're spreading yourself out through a course of 100 lineups to hopefully a couple of them hit. So, whatever your wallet can handle, really. So I think if you're doing not that many, then you got to be more judicious on the players that you're picking.
And here's one league, and here's another team, just really quick. If this was a 2-4-4, this is a 2-4-4 format. So I had I had Mahomes and Cousins as my quarterbacks.
Okay.
I had Austin Eckler, James Cook, J.K. Dobbins, and Elijah Mitchell as my running backs. Now all these guys play on wild card weekend. They're probably all not going to lose, but if three out of four of them lose, we're really being spread thin here.
Yeah.
And then I only have four, you know, wide receiver tight ends, Justin Jefferson. I have Juju, Dallas Goedert, and Mecole Hardman. So this league is probably going to be missing. Actually, hold on. Let me see the format again.
That lineup, you're definitely banking on KC winning the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm banking on KC winning the whole thing and having like a lot of spike week potential. So
yeah,
but I think in this one, I may take a zero in one of the wide receiver tight end spots because I have three other guys that are on bye. So hopefully Justin Jefferson just has an all world game.
Yeah,
and just does everything he's supposed to do. But we'll see. But this was like one of the teams that I kind of screwed up on a little bit, but it still has potential though, especially if it makes it out.
Yep. Yeah. Cause you got that giant secondary which is not good, but they always find a way to stay in these games. So you're definitely going to need that Justin Jefferson blow up game for sure. All right. You know, this is, we're at the end of the show, man. Like, no good going back and checking some of our predictions in the preseason.
Checking the receipts.
How they shaked out. So just being more accountable for the people that are listening, and you know, we can go back and look at our process and, you know, fine tune it for next year. So make sure y'all tap into the All Gas newsletter that we drop every Friday morning at 7:01 a.m. You can find that. I know you can find it on my Twitter handle. You can find it on Destination Devi on Twitter. Hit that subscribe button if you don't already not tapped into that as we get really deep into, you know, draft season. I know Ray and Jay Rich and Jordan Backus are a data guy that drops a lot of these analytics on these college profiles. I know we got rookie drafts that are going on, so you'll see the ADP, how they fluctuate during the course of this time before we get to the draft season. So, you know, it's exciting to get this time of the season. And also Ray does the film breakdown studies on Wednesday night. So if you're not tapped into the Discord, you can definitely tap into that. So no, that's all I got, man. Like, what else? You got anything else before we get up out of here?
No, it was a great season. Hopefully, you know, a lot of the stuff that we've been, you know, kind of conveying to you guys for the last 17 plus weeks, you know, you guys turn that into some championships and a little extra money in your pocket. And, you know, a lot of our Prize Picks plays, hopefully some of those, you know, a lot of those cashed. For you guys, especially on Gene's side, Gene had a much better season than I did, from the Prize Picks plays perspective. But yeah, hopefully you guys had a lot of success, man. And we're excited to continue to bring you content, and hopefully we can, you know, steer you in the right direction for some of these best ball tournaments.
Until then, we'll be back next week. So y'all be safe.
Peace out.